just to check to make sure that everything is working. I guess we're ready to start then. This is Jim Boning of the Center for History of Chemistry speaking with Dr. Franklin, J. Franklin Hyde, in his home at Marco Island, Florida, on September 30th, 1986. Dr. Hyde, you were born on March 11th, 1903 in Solvay, New York. Can you tell me something about your parents?
Well, my father's name was Burton DeForest Hyde. When I arrived on the scene, he was in the sand and gravel business. And my mother was born Amelia Bennett. And then Solvay is a small village. It's a suburb of Syracuse, and it's the location of the Solvay Process Company.
Yes.
And it was also home for a number of other, for a small town that was. The Fraser and Jones Malleable Iron Works, the Pass and Seymour Insulator Works, the Hammond Steel Company, and the Iroquois Pottery
Company.
My dad had the, along with the sand and gravel, he had the equipment to, we used to unload clay from canal boats or along the Erie Canal, and we used to unload coal cars for instance, for the Hammond Steel Company. And as soon as I was big enough to handle a shovel or drive a team of horses, I had a plenty of outdoor exercise during the summers, of course. And I was named, actually, after my two grandfathers. I never knew my grandfathers. One was James Bennett. I found out here only recently somebody found his discharge papers. He was a sergeant in Sheridan's cavalry during the Civil War. And I guess he was taken prisoner and spent some time in Libby Prison, which is, I guess, a suburb of Richmond. I don't know. But I don't know too much about my grandparents. Of course, my grandmother, on my mother's side, her name was Childs, Lucy Childs. And on my father's side, I knew my grandmother on my father's side very well. She lived with us for many years. Her name was Martin, Lydia Ann Martin, in fact. And she was born in Sandy Creek, Oswego County, up between Syracuse and Watertown somewhere. So I know some of the history back to the family, at, even a little further, but that's...
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have an older brother, Solon W. Hyde. Back in those days, it's interesting, they used to name their kids after famous people lots of times. Solon, my brother, was named after my father's uncle, whose name was Solon Webster Martin. And my grandmother, she had several brothers. One of them was Henry Clay Martin, and George Washington Martin, and
you went to grade. You lived then in Solvay, and you went to school there.
That's right. I went through the Solvay public schools, and I managed to get a high school Regents diploma.
Oh, okay.
And After the summers, of course, we had, I got pretty hardy outdoor life, and we used to, I remember drawing brick sand with a team of horses and a dump wagon when they built one of the Arm and Hammer bacon soda places. They're part of the Salve complex. And later after the war, I think this was one of the first atmospheric nitrogen, you know, the Haber process, they confiscated it from after the war, and this was one of the first installations, I think, in this country. They needed ammonia, of course, for this Salve process. And so I drew some of the brick sand when that building was built.
When did you have any teachers that had any influence on you?
You know, when you think back, you realize that you had good teachers and maybe some that weren't so good. But, for instance, I had a good German teacher. We learned a few German songs in the fifth grade, I think. It was the fifth grade. Mm. So I had all my German in high school. And I think that the principal, his name was Claude Duval, I think. He was the principal of the high school, and he taught geometry. And when I look back, I was pretty good at geometry, and I think it was partly that we had a teacher who had the ability to interest and motivate the youngsters. He was that kind of a teacher. So I...
Did you have any chemistry at high school?
The chemistry was... The chemistry laboratory was the one bench with a few bottles sitting on it. The lady, I can't remember her first name now, but she was a good teacher. She taught more than just chemistry. And I learned a little bit of chemistry in high school. There was no laboratory connected with it hardly. She did a few experiments, and so it was probably enough to get me interested a little bit. I don't know that living in that Salve process atmosphere had anything to do with my interest in chemistry. It might have, unconsciously, but it was, of course. The Salve was a village of about 3,000 or 4,000 people, and probably a lot of them worked for the Salve Process Company.
Now, when you said you had the Regents Scholarship, what did that in? How did that?
Well, Regents Diploma. What that meant is the state had that's a system in New York State, at least they. Had it isn't like a commission, but it's the regents. I don't know how to explain it really, but they put out an examination, what they call a regents examination, in almost every course that you will get in high school. And so if you pass the state regents examination, where you get a state regents diploma, you can graduate from high school, of course, without a high school diploma. But if you take all these state regents exams, well, you'll get a state. One of the things that does for you is you don't have to take a college entrance examination, or at least you thought at that time you didn't. That was pretty much the way things were. So, then of course I was not too far from Syracuse University. I don't know why, but I had to go. My folks didn't think they could afford to send me, and I think I worked so hard that summer that they could hardly say no. I got a little help from a small scholarship, but Mostly, of course, I lived at home. That meant a streetcar ride twice a day for maybe an hour or so. But I wanted to go. I don't know what motivated me. I guess it's just that I was interested in what made things tick. And I just wanted to go to college. And that was it.
What year was that started at
that? I graduated from high school in 1919, in June 1919. So I started as a freshman in the fall of 1919 at Syracuse.
Did you select any major when you first entered?
No, I took a general course, liberal arts course. It was a liberal arts course. And at that time, what you were expected to do was take, if you had a foreign language, you were supposed to start a new foreign language, which I did. I started taking French.
Yeah.
And I continued, one of my bad subjects was Latin. It's the only course that I ever flunked in high school, and so I continued it, but these people at Syracuse, one thing I learned in the Latin class was the Greek alphabet. You know, you need that really in science or in math, where a lot of those symbols are used, but I don't think I did very well in Latin. I think they just passed me to get rid of me.
When did you make your selection of a major then?
Well, I think that I just naturally went in that direction. I took math, and I had an interest in math, and I always continued. You know, math is quite a graduated thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the bad things about it was that I missed advanced algebra in high school, where I learned something about infinite series, and that dogged me the rest of my life.
Really?
I mean, it bothered me, and I missed it. But I did like math, and immediately I went for chemistry. I don't think I ever... I just didn't have to make a decision. That was my natural bent, I think.
When
I... freshman chemistry was a very interesting thing for me, and we had a Professor Ross Baker, who I think was one of the great teachers of that time. He was a very active person, and always had some kind of demonstration that was to stir you up and get you interested in things. He was a very good teacher. So that certainly bent me towards chemistry, and actually his hobby was glass blowing.
Really?
And I don't know that I was anything special, but he taught me to, I guess he gave a small course in glass blowing. Anyways, I learned a little something about glass blowing from Professor Baker. And I think he helped me to, if there was some little odd jobs around, like cleaning some of the demonstration ware or something, I got a chance to do it. You know, that was sort of thing that, and I kind of made the chemistry building my home or headquarters when I was up at school. And of course, then Professor McCroskey taught a course, this was a second year course, in inorganic preparations that interested me. And this was my first experience with silicon chemistry, actually. One of the, I think the directions were probably the same as Berzelius used, I don't know, but one of the things that attracted me, of course, was the a lot of energy involved in the thing. What you did was make sand and aluminum powder and set it off with a piece of magnesium, and you got a little reticle of silicon in the bottom of the crucible, which then I converted to silicon tetrachloride with chlorine. And that was my first, I don't know that that had any particular thing to do with things later, but and then of course I got into organic chemistry, and I, barring none, I think that Dr. Beener, Professor Reginald Beener, was the greatest teacher that I've ever known. He was a graduate of McGill University, and then he'd gotten his doctor's degree at the University of Berlin under Emil Fischer.
Oh, yes.
And I think his thesis, I may not be right on this, but I think his thesis was a synthesis of asparagine.
Really?
And, but the way he lectured, well, you can see this pile of books back there, a good many of them. You could get every word, and he used the blackboard, and what his ability as a teacher is a little hard to describe, but when he talked, he made you feel that you were right there when something new was discovered. And he not only gave you the formula, for instance, of uric acid, but he gave you the chemistry that proved the structure of it. And that was one of the keys, I think, to his ability to teach. And he had a pleasant, easygoing way about him that you could just get everything down. Well, I think he made an organic chemistry out of me, for sure.
You had quite a combination then between the two, organic and inorganic, which played a vital part later on.
Some of these are unconscious, I think. It's just they kind of fit together unconsciously. You don't realize it. But then in our third year, was a second year organic, we used Perkin and Kipping's textbook.
Oh, really?
It's a new edition out. I never made anything out of it at the time, but that was the Grignard had been discovered just about 1903 or 1904, and there was about a page or two in Perkin and Kipping about the use of the Grignard in synthesizing arsenic compounds and silicon. There was a few examples of the use of the Grignard for synthesis. Mm-hmm. And that meant that I knew that organosilicon compounds existed. I never figured I'd ever use it. You know, it's one of those things.
That's interesting.
But then I graduated actually my advisor made a few mistakes. His arithmetic wasn't very good, and so I had enough. I had all of the required courses and to graduate in January of 1923. Had gotten. They gave me a job as a part-time laboratory assistant in the organic department, and I was living at home, and I thought, well, I just don't know enough chemistry to go out and tell anybody I'm a chemist. And here I'm living at home, and I thought, well, I'm going to get a master's degree. And what this did was give me a chance to take all of the special courses that Dr. Beener gave, which would be maybe organic nitrogen compounds, another would be carbohydrates, more concentrated specialized courses, and call it advanced chemistry, if you will, but those were part of his way of teaching. I took all of the extra courses that he gave, and then I managed to get my master's degree in June of 1925.
25 or 24?
In June of 25, I think.
You got your undergraduate degree in 23?
January 23.
Okay.
Yeah. My bachelor's degree.
Right. Did you do any research at Syracuse?
For a master's degree, you were supposed to do some research, and I think that Dr. Beener, as far as a PhD, I don't think that he felt that their ability, their graduate school, had what it takes to turn out PhDs, although I'm sure that some people did get their doctor's degrees there. And I've forgotten now what the... I remember struggling to... I think one of the things that he was interested in that he suggested that I tinker with was to see if I could replace chlorine on the aromatic ring with a fluorine. And by one of the things would, of course, be to put nitrile groups or other substituents in the ring that would probably loosen the chlorine. In fact, that the trinitrochlorobenzene is pretty easy. It's a fairly reactive chlorine. I never succeeded, but that was part of my thesis for my master's degree. Then I got to talk. One of the things was reported at the Sigma Psi meeting.
Mm.
If there'd been an escape route of some sort, I don't know, I could have jumped through the window. You know, I just wasn't used to that sort of thing. I managed to stay alive, get my report, and then that pretty much became a member of Sigma Psi at that time. So
this was still at Syracuse.
Yes.
Do you recall any student colleagues of your Syracuse days? People that you knew there at Syracuse?
Well, for instance, I did know Dr. Peterson, who later went to Midland. He was in one of those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew Dr. King, Shorty King. He was a pretty close friend of mine, and he got his doctor's degree at Syracuse, but he worked with Professor McCroskey. It wasn't in organic chemistry, it was in inorganic chemistry, actually. And I can't, most of the people that I knew there are gone now. You lose track of people after a while.
Mm-hmm. How were you supporting yourself through this?
Well, I was still living at home all during this time, and I had this part-time assistantship, if you want to call it that, a laboratory assistant, a laboratory instructor, mm-hmm. whatnot, and so that paid for my tuition and so forth, and here I was living at home, so that made it easy. The only thing is that, what, 2 or 3 hour ride on a streetcar for 5 years. I think back at it.
Did you do any reading on the streetcar all that time?
It's pretty hard to do. I didn't really do much on that score, no.
What were you thinking about in terms of your career plans? You were working on
your... Well, I began to realize that there was so much still to learn, that, and if I wanted to go further, I would have to go somewhere else. And I'd heard that Professor Adams was one of the leading organic chemists in the country, and he was at the University of Illinois. So what I started doing is riding around for half-time assistantships. And the reason I heard about, I hadn't read much, I wasn't up on research, or I research papers. But we had an Alpha Chi Sigma meeting over at, this is how little incidents do influence you sometimes, over at Colgate. They were just initiating a new Alpha Chi Sigma chapter there. And I sat next to one of these professors over there. You know, they get nicknames for people sometimes. This fellow, they called him Cookie Cutter Smith. The reason they called him Cookie Cutter was that one leg was shorter than the other, and he had a metal frame on the bottom of his shoe. But here he says, if you're interested in organic chemistry, Professor Adams is one of the leading organic chemists in this country. So what I did, I wrote around to University of Michigan, University of Wisconsin, and the University of Illinois, and I heard first, I think, from University of Michigan, and I would have worked with Moses Gomber.
Oh, yes.
But it was right in the middle of the year, and I thought, well, I owe Syracuse, I've agreed to part-time teach there for the summer. So I declined that. I thought, well, I shouldn't do that. The next one I heard from was the University of Illinois, which is just exactly the one that I wanted to hear from. And Professor W.A. Noy Sr. was the head of the chemistry department at that time. And I got the job of a part-time assistant. So in the fall of 1925, I went to Urbana, and then the part-time assistantship involved working for Professor B.S. Hopkins. He taught freshman chemistry. And he, and I knew some of the people that worked with him, for instance, Lawrence Quill, and the job he had under Professor Hopkins was he was looking for element 61 that was still missing, which is now promethium.
Oh, they're looking for alinium, was that?
Well, alinium was what they thought they found some X-ray lines that showed that they had isolated alinium. And that's what they were going to name it. It turned up quite a bit of controversy because the Italians came along. They thought they'd been there first, and they were going to call it Italium. And whether they really had lines or not, the promethium was made later on, one of the synthetic elements, of course, but its half-life is pretty short. And so whether they actually had isolated any stable promethium, I don't think it's ever been settled. But they did have an argument with the Italians over the naming of it. And it didn't turn out to be alinium or Italian, of course.
Where did you stay when you got to Illinois?
First off, temporarily, I went. They had Alpha Chi Sigma had a fraternity house there, and that gave me a chance to get to Illinois and find a place to live. I went with some a private home where they were renting out rooms for students, and then I changed pretty soon when I got acquainted with some of the fellows that were also in chemistry. And so I learned Robert Yoey was one of them, and Lawrence Quill, the other one, the one that worked at Hopkins. I've forgotten now, Yoey went into organic chemistry, I think. I think he's retired now, but I think he went into I think Illinois, at the university there, they had a survey had something to do with coal and natural resources. They had a laboratory there, and I think that the last time I knew about him, he was working, probably had charge of it. But it was.
When did you first meet Roger Adams then?
Well, as soon as school opened there in the fall of 25, and he took me on and suggested a research program, and then I worked part time in the freshman chemistry. One of the things I wasn't used to is having recitation section, and that nearly floored me because I wasn't used to that sort of thing. And on top of that, Professor Kramer was also one of the inorganic professors there, and you'd have your in the middle of a recitation, he'd quietly open the door and walk in. You know, and the only thing that kept me from jumping out the window was the snow was too high. That just about floored me when they did that.